Support for First Coast Connect is provided in part by Baptist Health and North Florida TPO.
Good morning, I'm Ann Schindler, and this is First Coast Connect. Today, a renovated Jags stadium and a new jail were the stated priorities of City Council President Ron Salem last year. Now, as he prepares to leave the top job, we ask him about the highs, lows, and unfinished work of his term. Later in the program, an Andrew Lloyd Webber classic brings Technicolor to the local stage. But first, it seems just weeks ago that Jacksonville City Council President Ron Salem was being sworn in as president. That title expires in about 3 days, and he joins us now for a debrief. Welcome back, President Salem.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
Thanks for being here. So we'll get to the good and the bad and the ugly in a moment. But first of all, has this been fun?
And I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I'll tell you, I like leadership. It's throughout my career, I've generally risen to the leadership position in any job that I've had. And this was the ultimate leadership position for me. I've enjoyed leading the council. I've enjoyed the initiatives we've had. And people ask me, aren't you glad it's over? I said, no, I've really enjoyed it and look forward to helping President White accomplish his goals in the next year.
And you like leadership. You also like politics.
I do. I really like public policy. I think there's a distinction there. You can influence public policy outside of government as well as inside government. Clearly, I have found you can influence a lot more when you're an elected official.
So what does this portend for your future? Are we going to see a mayoral bid perhaps in 2027?
And I love public policy and would like to continue serving in some form. You know, how that plays out over the next 3 years or so, I don't know. But would like to continue serving this government in some format beyond the end of my term.
Would you consider challenging Donna Deegan? I mean, I feel like your relationship has evolved a little bit. It's been very contentious at some times. Lately, it seems it's been a little more collegial, and especially with the deal and the Jaguars.
Well, I like Donna. We're friends. Friends squabble. And I think that's what's happened on occasion over the last year. But 3 years is a long time, and we just have to see how it plays out.
Do friends challenge one another for mayoral roles?
I think we'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen in my future.
So that's not a no.
I would keep all options available.
All right. So I want to start with some news of downtown. There's obviously a lot of news that we should talk about, and we'll get to the stadium. But there is some news that's specific to just the last couple of days. My colleague at the Florida Times Union, David Bauerlein, has been reporting on the Laura Street Trio. It's a three-building historic renovation project that has been underway for decades. He's reported that the Downtown Investment Authority is prepared to cut bait on that project on Friday. I would like to get your sense of what that would mean. And then also, you just yesterday filed a memo asking to have that project assigned to a special committee you created.
All that is accurate. I understand what the DIA is prepared to do. I found out just a day or two ago that that was on their agenda. Vice President Designate Carrico, who chairs that special committee, reached out to me and said, I'd like you to assign the Laura Street Trio to the downtown committee that I set up. I'd like to explore various options for those buildings. And I said, I'll be glad to do that. Put out the memo.
What was your reaction when you heard that DIA was planning to basically say, we're going to stop negotiating with this developer and the talk of incentives to redevelop the Laura Street Trio?
Well, I had heard there was some talk of doing that within the DIA and the mayor's office, that their frustration had reached quite a height. I wasn't aware it was occurring at that particular meeting and the suddenness of that.
Their frustration with the developer?
With the whole process, I think.
Okay. So what is your reaction when you hear that, though, that that's what they're thinking about doing? Is that a frustrating bit of news?
I mean, I'm not a developer, but everyone tells me those three buildings are critical to downtown and would like to find some way that we can develop those buildings. My personal feeling is the city had them before, nothing happened. I'd like to see them somehow stay in the private sector and get someone to develop those buildings.
Is it acceptable if those buildings were not developed, if they got to the point where they're just beyond repair and are taken down. Is that acceptable?
It's not, but I think we're reaching the point that that could occur if we don't do something over the next year or so to have a plan in place.
So for people who maybe aren't familiar with how DIA works, how unusual is it for the city to kind of step in and Bigfoot, I guess for lack of a better word, a project that is under their purview?
I'm not aware that this has ever happened like this, where they just decided we are not negotiating anymore. That's sort of foreign to me.
Okay. And so, but in terms of the city council getting involved, bringing it into that special committee that you created?
I didn't have an extensive discussion with Councilmember Carrico because I didn't want to get into policy over the phone. He just asked to have it, said he wanted to explore all options. And I said, fine, Kevin, I'll send it to your committee.
And you think that that, I mean, I know people have been talking about whether DIA is doing the work that the city wants it to do in terms of pace, in terms of, you know, has there been enough vibrant development downtown? I think everybody kind of agrees there has not been much vibrant development downtown, not in the way that has been envisioned. But do you think that the DIA has outlived its usefulness?
Well, that's the purpose of this committee, is to explore all options for downtown development. I know they're looking at other cities. I understand that there may be some legislation that's in the hopper, and I want this committee to go through that process. I know President White has indicated he will extend it beyond June 30th so that that committee continues under his watch, which I think is a good idea, and just give them a time to explore all sorts of options for how should we manage downtown development.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to outgoing City Council President Ron Salem for a look back and a look ahead. And you can join our conversation on air by calling 904-549-2937. You can also email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, or you can reach out on social media. We have a question actually on X from Fire Pit Mike. He asks, will Councilman Salem support a budget proposal that funds the broken promises of consolidation? Would he recommend a committee to determine how much funding is needed to fulfill those promises, as was done for the jail?
That's a big topic. Mike might be referring to what's occurring over in out east in terms of the CBA, and I'm in the process of learning a lot more about the east side. I've set up a couple of meetings over the near future, and I'm going to take a tour of that area. I'm familiar with it, but I really want to see what has happened over the last couple of years to see how we can help the east side.
Do you think, though, I think to his point, that a dedicated committee might be needed to look at things like, you know, infrastructure promises and that were made and perhaps never lived up to in terms of what the consolidated city government was supposed to provide to all areas of town?
I would suggest Mike talk to President White.
Okay. Passing the torch.
He's the next president. My term is over in 48 hours.
All right. I want to ask you about the stadium, because that's obviously a major consequential decision that was made. It's, I think, a pretty significant accomplishment of your term and also working with the mayor. You decided to break off the community benefits agreement, the CBA that you just referenced. Tell us, first of all, what your thinking was on splitting that off and whether you would have had the votes to pass the stadium deal had you not pulled apart that community benefits agreement portion.
Well, let me make a couple of points, Ann. The community benefit agreement as it stands today is $117 million. The $100 the Jaguars committed and the extra $17 that we will receive due to keeping the parks in the plan. It is by far the largest CBA agreement ever. The previous high was $90 million in Buffalo. So we have a significant CBA already. One of my major concerns was to try to get as many council members to vote on the stadium agreement due to conflicts. It was my understanding when everything came out but the parks that the council members that were conflicted would be able to vote. I was very disappointed at the end of the process when they advised a couple of council members, Pittman and Carrico, that they could not vote. Fortunately, Gaffney was able to vote, determined he could vote. I would have carved out the whole CBA myself if I had the votes in order to, for those people to vote on such a significant piece of legislation.
And you mean you want them to be able to weigh in on the stadium deal and not have to be voting on the CBA portion?
Well, the CBA portion created the conflict.
Now, what do you think about that conflict? I mean, we've talked on this program about that, you know, whether that's a perception or a reality, if you're forecasting down the road that your nonprofit may at some point could potentially bid on some money, does that really constitute a real and present conflict?
The Office of General Counsel advised them that was a conflict. It's frustrating to me, but when you have part-time council members, and I believe in part-time council members, they're going to have another job and they potentially have conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
I've had conflicts in the past. Almost everybody on that council has had an insurance conflict, a healthcare conflict that I had in the past that I removed. I got out of it because I was tired of it. So conflicts are fairly common on the dais, and it's unfortunate in this case that on such a significant piece of legislation that people could not vote.
How do you think that the community is responding to this, and how are you personally responding to the deal? Are you delighted? Are you just kind of happy that it's done?
My initial reaction was relief because I had spent so much energy and time working with all the parties to get it to June 25th. The auditors, legislative services, within my purview worked, very hard because I went to them and said, June 25th, we're going to vote. So let's back up from there and figure out what we have to do to get all the hearings and notice meetings and all things so we can vote on June 25th. And I told my colleagues, you will get every question answered. If you do not get your questions answered, we will not vote. And I think we accomplished both those things.
So what do you hear after a vote like that? Do you hear from somebody like Shad Khan? Does he give you a ring and give you a thumbs up?
I had a chance to speak to Shad after the vote. I have obviously speak to Mark Lamping all the time. I've gotten dozens and dozens of text messages and phone calls from people just happy that we were able to get that accomplished. I think it's monumental for Jacksonville to know that we have the Jaguars for 30 more years in a renovated stadium. I think the Jaguars and Mayo Clinic are probably the most significant things that have happened to this city. And now we've solidified both of those, obviously.
In terms of downtown, I just want to revisit that briefly because I've been seeing, I think it's kind of on the world of social media, you start to, you know, get generated algorithms sent to you and such. But, you know, the history of Jacksonville, recent history as recently as like the 90s and the 2000s, but as far back as the 70s, it does feel like if you look back at that time that it was just a much more vibrant place downtown. And you've lived here your whole life. Where do you feel like Jacksonville is right now? Is it in a trough? Is it on a trajectory of some kind? Do you have a sense as to where we'll be looking at downtown Jacksonville 20 years from now, looking back at pictures of this time, where it fits into that overall path of ups and downs?
I think there's some positive things happening. This related project going up on the south side will be, I think, very significant.
Which one?
Related.
The
related project, the Gateway Jacks project that's coming in will be, I think, a significant project. I think there are a lot of things good happening downtown. I think getting the stadium solidified, looking at an entertainment district down there, what we're doing at the baseball park in terms of the renovations that are occurring there, the Four Seasons, we've appropriated the money for the parks along the river through the CBA. There's a lot of good things happening. I wish they would have happened years ago, but better late than never.
Do you think that there's enough emphasis on retail? I was thinking about, you know, places that people like to go visit. We always hear about, you know, restaurants. Is there a place to eat or is there a grocery store? But the reality is if you go somewhere, you know, that you want to be a place, a neighborhood that you want to check out, it's almost always because there's little shops there that you want to go in and out of. And the very few places in downtown Jacksonville that have that vibe do have that element, you know, those little boutiques that you can duck in and out of. Do you think that there's enough emphasis on enabling small businesses, or small retailers, or even large retailers like a drugstore, to take up residence downtown.
It's tough, and we all know what happened when Regency Square was built. Downtown went down, and then the Avenues was built, and Regency suffered. And now the town center's there.
I mean, is it a zero-sum game, though?
Well, I think there are things that can be downtown, but I think to have traditional retail, as I was exposed to as a child, where my mother would take me downtown to Furskett's or May Cohen's to buy clothes and such, I think those days are gone.
Really?
I do.
I mean, do you think a downtown can survive without a retail component like that?
I think it's got to be special type of retail. I don't think you're ever going to see the department store type approach in our downtown.
So what do you do to get those smaller businesses in and involved downtown?
Well, you've got to have security. People have to be safe at restaurants, and you've got to get people living downtown, which we're all working on trying to do.
Mm-hmm. We are talking to outgoing City Council President Ron Salem, and you can reach us at 904-549-2937, or you can reach out on social media. We have a message from Tom on Facebook. He says, "The City Council under Ron Salem has been the most contentious and partisan one that I've seen in all the years that I've been here. While council meetings presided over by Salem have been plagued by procedural gaffes," excuse me, my reading is getting covered up by something here. "Under Salem, the council's handling of divisive issues like the community benefits agreement, Confederate statues, and unflinching support for Israel has undermined citizens' faith in the council and its ability to move the city forward." So I guess I would put that as not a great report card. Thoughts?
I completely disagree with him. I don't know what else to say. I have great relationships with all my colleagues. I think the meetings have been organized and run very well. And yes, there were some issues that came up during the year where there were disagreements. I mean, that's the process. That's the process.
But I
think everybody was treated fairly. Everybody had a chance to be heard. And I think that's all you can do.
Some of the more controversial moments certainly surrounded Confederate monuments. I feel like there was a time on this program where no city leader could come on and that would not be the sole topic of phone calls. That issue somewhat passed, do you think, now that the statue at Springfield Park, the Women of the Southland, has been removed? Do you think that that issue has somewhat been deflated? Where do you see that on the city's radar?
I think it's deflated. I think it's behind us. I don't hear anything about Confederate monuments anymore.
How do you feel retrospectively about how you handled that issue? There was some concerned that you were perhaps creating pushback for the mayor's decision to remove that statue in a way that didn't exist when Mayor Curry did something similar.
And we could debate that, and we have. There were differences between the two that have been outlined very clearly in the past. They were different. I thought the mayor overstepped herself. We debated it, and it's behind us.
Would you have done anything differently?
No, I would not have.
Oh, okay. We've got a call from Arlington. Good morning, Eric. Welcome to First Coast Connect.
A couple things real quick. I hope for your sake and for everyone else's that this issue is behind us. I don't think it is. Another issue that's not behind us and that's growing in enormity and importance is climate change. So I realize that your job, is probably not necessarily on the forefront of that battle. But what have you done? I mean, what are you going to be able to tell your grandkids when this stadium is underwater that we're just, going to pay $1.5 billion for? When that thing's underwater, what are you going to be able to tell your grandkids about what you did in order to mitigate climate change? Thank you.
Eric, thank you. President Salem, it's an issue I actually asked your successor about a couple weeks ago when he was on this program, and he sort of said he was going to stay in his lane when it came to issues of climate change. How do you think this council, under your tenure or just the body that is currently in office, is in any way measurably different than the councils of the past 20 or 30 years when it comes to dealing with resiliency and the impacts of climate change?
Well, I know we've hired, in my tenure on the council, a resiliency officer. She is evaluating downtown and as new buildings come up, evaluating their heights and such. I firmly believe the Jaguars are not going to renovate a stadium that's going to be underwater at any point. So it's not my area of expertise, clearly, and I rely on other people to advise me, and I think the council does as well on what we should do and how we should do it.
I mean, the stadium may not be underwater, but as somebody that used to work over at Channel 12, I can tell you that there's no getting to and from it during a storm like Irma or Matthew.
Well, those are unique events that are going to occur and probably will occur again.
Yeah, I mean, some would say they're less and less unique.
They seem to be happening with more frequency. I would agree with you. I grew up here. I went through Hurricane Dora in the 60s. So I know what a hurricane can do to Jacksonville. I lived it. My father's business lived it. So I hear you.
We've got a call from Jason in San Marco. Good morning, Jason. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to point out something that I'm intimately familiar with downtown. And there's one organization down there that is absolutely excelling at everything it's trying to do. That's the Jacksonville Symphony. And we're starting to get more support from the symphony, but I think from the city, but I think we need to recognize that the symphony is the crown jewel of our artistic and cultural presentations at Duval County and all of Northeast Florida. It goes way beyond just Duval County. And we've set records in ticket sale revenue in the last 2 years. We're achieving artistic things that probably never really thought possible here. And I would love to see even more support, not just in terms of money, but in terms of our city council and city leadership coming down in person to these concerts. There's pretty much an open door for them. If they want a ticket, it will be provided. I would love to see your guests come to the symphony's opening concert in next September. That would be nothing but a wonderful event. And we do appreciate the support we get from the city. We're working more and more with them to get the symphony recognized as something that's actually really important. And I'll be honest, we don't ask for $750 million. We ask for a much, much smaller amount, but it's an incredibly efficient organization in terms of what it does with the money that it gets from the people who support it.
Jason,
thanks for taking my call, and please come see and support the symphony.
Thank you so much. I'm going to ask you a related question to that. President Salem, we just learned, I guess, last week or the week before that the governor has cut all grants funding, state funding for arts and cultural organizations. That includes the symphony. All of these budgets were zeroed out. We did a program on that. It was yesterday. What are your thoughts about that decision? And what are you hearing from the arts community here about what they need to make up for that enormous loss of dependable income, or what they thought was dependable?
Governor made a decision to cut those things. I know I've heard from some organizations that are looking for city help. Obviously, the mayor's putting together her budget. It'll be released on July 15th. We'll see what's in there to help the arts community.
What do you think about his decision to zero out the arts budgets?
That's his prerogative.
As a city council president, do you have a problem with that, though? I mean,
I don't. That's his prerogative. That's the line item veto that the authority the governor has.
Sure, but I mean, in terms of its impact on your own city's arts and culture, do you not object to the fact of it?
I don't know all the facts that went into his decision. I don't like to get into people's brains and figure out why they did and what they did on something like that, because I don't know the implications of that, where that money is going otherwise.
Sure. But I mean, even if you don't know why he did it, in terms of just advocating for your own arts and culture organizations here, do you not object to the cuts?
Well, we advocate for them here, and we put money in our budget to support them.
Do you think the city's prepared to make up for the millions of dollars that they are now going to be, or hundreds of thousands of dollars that they're now going to be asking for?
We'll have to see what the mayor puts in her budget.
Mm-hmm. Would you support additional arts funding you're going to be running the finance committee in the next term here, I believe. So
that's correct.
What would your posture be in terms of supporting additional funding for arts and culture?
What I usually do, and I've been finance chairman before, is wait for the mayor to propose his or her budget, and then I react to it.
Gotcha. We've got a call from Charles on the west side. Good morning, Charles. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Ron, and everybody else. And I wanted to, Ron, there's been some contentious times, but I want to thank you for your service and your dedication that you have given to the city of Jacksonville and Duval County. And I hope you continue, like you you're not sure what you're going to do yet, but I'm glad you've been around, and I want to thank you for your service, even though we haven't agreed on a lot of things. But it's great that a citizen like you has done what they've done. So I thank you, Ron.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your comments.
How do you feel the report card is from the community on your tenure, aside from people like Charles?
Well, I set out a year ago at my installation speech and went through a number of items, and I have accomplished those items. I reviewed those at my concluding speech last week. So I'm very pleased that what I said I was going to do, I did. And I think that's all you can ask.
I want to ask you about the jail, because that obviously was one of your main priorities, and there has been progress made on that front. You established a committee to look at building a new jail. That committee has made recommendations. It's a significant price tag.
It is.
You think it's worth the cost?
Well, it's something we have to do, Ann. There are certain things that as a community we have to do. I was here when the Christopher Point Jail, the one across the street, was under a federal probe because the conditions were so bad, and we were forced to build a jail, and we ended up building it across the street. We went up with it instead of a spread out type campus, and we have regretted that ever since we did it. So if we don't do something about our jail at some point in the next few years, we're going to be in the same situation where we're forced to do something. That committee led by Michael Boylan did a wonderful job of outlining the health care needs that need to be in a new jail, mental health services, et cetera. So I look forward to working with Sheriff T.K. Waters to get that on the agenda. The good news is he's moving his the operational, the administrative side out of the Police Memorial Building into the Blue Cross Building, which is to me is a great first step as we try to take care of our jail.
Yeah, the Florida Blue and the Riverside. And so we think then perhaps the old Police Memorial Building will absorb some of the jail functions in the interim?
There's been some talk of maybe setting up a clinic or something within that building, because one of the biggest problems we had, we also did a financial review of UF Health and found out that roughly a third of the indigent care expenses that we have in this city is due to inmates. Many of those could be treated within the jail if we had the appropriate space and appropriate equipment there. So it's just another reason that we need to build a new jail.
I want to ask you about costs, because we talk about the $1 billion of the jail, the not quite, you know, roughly $1 billion if the CBA is approved for the Jaguar Stadium. The price tag at pulling septic tanks out of the neighborhoods where they're failing and replacing them with sewer, that's another $1 billion. But we're also looking at bringing back pensions for our police and fire. In fact, I mean, we have a deal, right, to bring back pensions for our police and fire. So
tentative deal. Has to be approved by the membership.
Sure, right. But, I mean, we have a presumptive deal, I guess we could say. The pension costs are really continuing to be an issue. I mean, in 2015, Mayor Brown at the time had a plan. It didn't get passed, but it would have basically made the pension plan about 10% of a pay cost per employee, about 10%. Under Curry, that new defined contribution plan, it went to 25% of pay for every employee. And then the Deegan plan, this collective bargaining agreement, would raise that to about 40, possibly as much as 46% per employee, that cost. How is the city going to absorb all of those costs? And we're talking, you know, a billion here, a billion there pretty soon.
And you're making the argument that I made in a committee meeting last week, where the CBA has $40 million in the 25-26 budget for countywide work and $40 million in the 26-27 budget. And I went through a litany of things, one of which is the pension costs. We still don't know what the pension costs are. The mayor has indicated she's going to release that around the time of her budget. There have been a lot of media requests for it. So I hear you. And before I'm ready to commit dollars in future budgets, I want to understand what our commitments are today to make sure we can meet them. Other other things greatly concern me is the UF campus. There's $250 million there that's been raised. They're looking for $300 in order to get that campus moving. They're looking for that $50 million to come from the city. Is that in our budget? I don't know. UF Health is looking for more money. We gave them $40 million in last year's budget. They're looking for $60 million this year. I don't know if that's in the budget or not. So before I can move forward, I need to see what the mayor is proposing in her budget.
So there are those considerations in the upcoming budget season. But when we're talking about billions, billions, billions of dollars, that's far beyond Mayor Deegan's purview even. We're talking about, 20, 30 years into the future. Is there no sense holistically as to how the city could possibly carry that much debt? And I say, if I was going to buy a house and a car and send my kid to college and retire all at the same time, you'd say, well, what's your plan?
Right.
What's our plan?
Well, for septic tanks, we're moving as quickly as the JEA can in terms of funding septic tanks. It's a very slow, difficult process to get a neighborhood to buy into it. It's like 75% of the neighborhood has to buy into it.
You mean give permission?
Permission. I'm sorry. Permission to put them in. And we're funding that as quickly as they can. We've got a list of, I think, 30 neighborhoods that are prioritized for septic tanks, as an example.
For sewage off septic. Yeah. That's
correct. So it will be a long-term process. That's a 30-year process or more in order to accomplish that. And we're still putting in septic tanks in parts of this community that function very well. So it's not like septic tanks are going away by any means in future development.
I want to ask you about that. I mean, it's something I've asked Mayor Deegan about as well, but it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense that the city continues to permit new development, especially far-flung development that is outside of the footprint of, where utilities reach, like water, sewer. When we're remediating these neighborhoods where they're failing, to continue to permit new development all over the city that uses septic tanks.
The technology is significantly better than what it was 30, 40, 50 years ago, number one. And number two, we're not putting them in areas that are close to water as we did many years ago, where the tanks can leak and get into the water supply.
So, I mean, that's news to me, and I'm not saying that that's not true. But the technology you think is different enough? I feel like it's a fairly basic system of a septic.
If we are to continue to develop in this community, septic tanks need to be one of the options that we can use.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why is that?
Because we don't have water and sewer to all areas of the county.
And you don't think that it would be reasonable to try to constrain some development to the areas that do have that service available?
No, I don't. I don't. Yeah. I think there are parts of this community where septic tanks are a very viable option.
We've got a call from Richard on the north side. Good morning, Richard. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I don't know how much time I have. And with all due respect to Mr. Salem there, I am listening to you spin yourself into so many pretzels that it's amazing. When you were asked about the governor's decision to gut cultural funding, you said it's his prerogative. When we talk about the mayor's decision, you got to see everything that there is before you make a decision. When you talk about the Jaguars, you guys passed the Jaguar deal in like record time. And we've been working with septic tanks here on the north side for 25 years. The Better Jacksonville plan was supposed to make the septic tanks better. And now we have a brand new plan to make a better stadium. And you're talking about high-tech septic tanks. And the reason for that is because not all areas of the county have infrastructure.
Richard, do you have a question?
Yeah, my question is, how is it that you can lead anything in this city? And by the way, how can you lead this city by saying it's that person's prerogative or that person's prerogative? What is it that you're going to say that you're going to do as the city council to close the gap that's obvious between the north side of town and the south side of town? And finally, when I moved here, the south side was cow pastures and sand dunes. And now it's fully developed with no septic tanks.
Richard, thank you for your comments. Appreciate it. your thoughts about that. I guess he is asking you more for a definitive answer on things you want to see as opposed to waiting to see.
I'm not sure I heard a question there, Ann.
Mm-hmm. Well, I
understand that there are people that feel like parts of the north side have been neglected. I get it. I think we've worked to try to remedy that over my time on the council. But it's a long-term process. It's a long-term process.
Why do you think it is a long-term process?
For example, I'm making an announcement Monday where we're putting $200,000 into Durkeyville to do a master plan of Durkeyville. I got $10 million appropriated for J.P. Small Baseball Park to renovate that park. That park almost got tore down during the urban renewal, and to make it a major league level park so Stanton, Edward Waters University, and other colleges can play baseball games there.
And that's where Jackie Robinson played and Hank Aaron.
That's now Hank Aaron Field. I had the field named after Henry Aaron. So it's not like I'm not working in that area and trying to better all parts of the community, but we have fixed resources, and we have to use them as we see fit.
And I guess the concern for some in the community is when you have such a big outlay, or we're talking about such big outlays with pension and jail and stadium, that it is hard, I think, for some people to justify that spending when there are all of these other really serious needs.
I understand. I would say, in my mind, the Jaguars are something we had to do. If we did not keep the Jaguars here, I shudder to think what would happen to Jacksonville in terms of, we would never have Major League Sports here ever again if we lost the Jaguars. So to me, that was a must that we had to get done. The jail is a requirement of this government to take care of people that are arrested appropriately. We have to do that. And we have to do it in a compassionate, effective way. And I am concerned that in that particular facility, it's difficult to do that. And we've got to, it's over 30 years old, it's in very bad shape, and we need to build a new jail.
What have you heard in terms of the jail about the city's legal exposure because of conditions, because of, you know, healthcare provider concerns or accessibility to healthcare?
Well, we've had some incidents, as you're well aware, where we've had some deaths and exposure. I don't know the exact situation where those cases are today.
Have you heard anything about federal exposure in terms of the Department of Justice or somebody taking an interest in conditions?
I have not as of yet.
Mm-hmm. We've got a message from Mark on Facebook. He says, what will the city do to keep the East Side from becoming a gentrified area owned by out-of-state developers?
A great question. And one of the things I want to learn over the next couple of weeks when we're on break, and I can spend some time on that, is what we are doing just to prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to see that area begin to take off and all the residents are not able to keep their homes where they are today. It's the same thing on the Emerald Trail is what we're trying to do, to make sure the residents are there, can stay there.
And so what do you look for when you're like reviewing this information? What kind of red flags do you see? What would you be looking for as a sign that gentrification or people, you know, being forced out of where they currently live is something that's a risk?
Well, I know Lyft Jax is very active out there. That's who I called yesterday and said, would you please meet with me? Tell me what you have done in that area over the last two, three years, where we are specifically, what are your needs going forward? And then after I get all that information, then I'd like you to take me around and show me some of the things that you're doing so I can be prepared for the debate on the East Side and other parts of the CBA later this summer.
We have an email from Amaryllis. She says, I would like to ask President Salem about what the council has done with the ceasefire resolution in Gaza. Has a vote been considered after 8 months of Jacksonville residents asking for one? This raises an interesting point. There was some controversy during your term. The city council took a vote on a support of Israel. I think they did that October 11th, so very early in that conflict after that terrible incident of violence. But there's been a I guess you'd say, an evolving dialogue on Israel and Palestine. Your family has its roots in Palestine, in Ramallah. I actually spoke to the mayor of Ramallah yesterday. How do you feel, first of all, about being the sole no vote on that Israel support legislation? You took some blowback for that.
I had no problem with my vote. And I have attempted to keep the council out of that process in my time as president. It was the worst 2 or 3 weeks of my tenure as president. It was very, very difficult. I had threats. So I made a decision. We are not going to get into that process going forward, and have kept it out of the council as best I can, even though people can come to public comment, and they do every 2 weeks, and ask for a ceasefire resolution. I didn't feel like it was productive to do that. I think it would just tangle the council up in a way that it would not be productive.
Did you consider back in October not allowing a vote on that Israel support resolution?
And it was there's a long story to that. It was introduced as an emergency. A council member can do that. I felt it was best to let it go through as an emergency, knowing that I would vote against it. It would just have been a worse situation if I would have deferred it, in my opinion.
Do you think anyone cares what the city council thinks about these conflicts?
Well, obviously there are people that care because they come to our council meetings every 2 weeks and speak out on it.
Fair enough. I mean, big picture, does it make any difference to the world if the city council supports Israel or supports?
I don't think it makes a great deal of difference internationally whether the Jacksonville City Council votes for a resolution on something internationally, but there are people that feel very passionate about it, and we allow them to speak.
We've got a call from Ron in Mandarin. Good morning, Ron. Just briefly, please.
Just a comment more than anything. Regarding the jail, regarding health care for the inmates, et cetera, why is it that we can't find the dollars, and this doesn't necessarily come from city council, come more from Sheriff Waters and such, but in terms of prevention rather than dealing with after the fact? We spend so much money on dealing with the incarcerated individual. Why can't we invest in terms of looking to prevent those individuals from needing to be incarcerated?
Well, that's a great question, and I have led the effort on the mental health offender program. I'd led the effort to get the initial funding 5 years ago, where we are diverting mental health people out of the, when they are arrested, if they're arrested for a misdemeanor and have a mental health problem, we are diverting them to a program coordinated by the Sulzbacher Center and rehabbing them, essentially getting them a place to stay, meals, drugs, and making them productive members of society. That program about a month ago received a national award by the American Psychiatric Association for its innovative work. So I believe in what you're saying, and have worked diligently to fund that program for it to be a model as we look at a new jail, to make sure that we're treating our mental health inmates differently than those that are more violent.
We're going to have to leave it there. Jacksonville City Council President for a little bit longer, Ron Salem, thank you for coming on. And I really just want to say thank you so much for being willing to come on the program, be available, and to take questions like this.
Thank you, Ann.
We'll be back in just a minute with a Technicolor look at what's on the stage in Jacksonville.
Deepa Fernandez, many Palestinians who were able to leave Gaza have ended up in Egypt with close to nothing.
Clothing, you know, you need to feel good in the world. And I think this is where we felt we could start helping.
We meet an American in Cairo who runs a free clothing boutique for Palestinian families. Next time, here and now.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
If you let Spotify pick what song plays next, chances are it's this one. But people are saying it's practically always this one. why is it always this one on the next Today Explained?
Tonight at 6:30 here on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, President Biden and Donald Trump were about to face the nation in their first presidential debate this season. We'll talk with Shane Goldmacher with the New York Times about what to expect from the debate and the swell in donations to Trump's campaign after his felony convictions. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
School voucher programs are sweeping across the U.S. These programs give taxpayer dollars for private schooling. Historically, vouchers targeted low-income families or students with disabilities, but recently they've expanded to include all families. Critics are concerned about pulling resources away from public schools, but could more choice mean more student success? Untangling the debate around school choice, that's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, it's a book based on the biblical book of Genesis, but in the hands of Andrew Lloyd Webber, it is a universal and non-religious musical. Here to tell us about the local staging of Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat is Aaron DiCicco, who plays the show's narrator. Hey, Aaron.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for being here. And Marcus Mann, who stars in the role of Joseph.
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for getting up and coming in today. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. So Marcus, our producer, went to the show over the weekend.
Yeah.
She had rave reviews of the performance and especially your voice.
Uh-huh.
It must be a fun role to play.
It is. It's actually one of my dream roles. It's really the show that got
one
me
of your
into
Technicolor
theater.
Dream roles?
Yes. 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 It's actually what got me into theater. So it's definitely a fun show to do and to sing, and the music's great. So
it was a show that you were involved in previously?
No. Yeah. So I saw this in high school, not knowing what musical theater was. And then finally came around, I was like, I'm gonna audition for this. And I've actually taken like a 4-year break, and to be back doing this, one of the dream shows, is amazing. So yeah.
This is a heavy lift though. This is an entirely sung musical. Is
yes,
that right? Yeah.
Yes. Thankfully we've got Erin, the narrator, who pretty much actually sings more than I do in the show. Mm-hmm. And she really tells the full story and just kind of helps carry the whole show, really, really, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you really do have to do kind of all of the lifting of that, right?
Yeah, most of the exposition does happen through the narrator. The brothers help with a lot of the songs, though. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Do you find yourself just walking around in regular life now singing, narrating your own existence?
Oh, yeah, melodically, 100%, yes.
So you're from Jacksonville.
I am, actually. Yeah, and this is, I think, the fourth or fifth time I've done this show. I did it 30 years ago when I was 13.
Wow. Who was the host then?
That was at Case Theater, which does not exist anymore.
Okay.
But now at the Alhambra. Yeah.
So you've done it in the same role?
I was in the children's choir the first several times I did it. I did it when the national tour came through in 1995, maybe 596. And then... done it, music directed it a couple times, and so it's definitely, like Marcus, one of my dream roles for sure.
How does it differ at Alhambra for you? How is this performance different than the other ones that you've been and watched?
Well, the other ones that I've been a part of, we usually take a couple months to work on. At the Alhambra, it's a pretty rigorous process.
Yeah.
We put a show up in about 10 days.
Yeah.
So
wow.
We rehearse a lot. We're together a lot. We build bonds quickly, and we learn to trust each other.
Kind of have to.
Yeah, it's a beautiful experience. It's so much fun, but it's definitely a whirlwind.
And so this is not a touring production. This is staged here, put together here. How is that different from, I mean, you've done both.
I'm sorry. Say that again. It's
wake up, Mark.
I'm sorry. You know, it's very early, and we had a show last night. So yeah, it's here in Jacksonville. It's great because it just helps us kind of be grounded in the show, have a routine, and just put on that show. I feel like it'd be so much different with the touring. If you were to tour this, it'd be so much more difficult. And it just helps us really bond with everybody and connect with the audience. It's really, really important for us to do
yes.
that.
You've done shows overseas. Is it different performing for a U.S. audience than it is for an audience
it's
in
very,
Asia, say?
Honestly, it's very similar. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Philippines are very warm people, the Filipinos. But it's very similar. I feel like there's always this this enchantment when audiences watch a musical. It's always like, wow, like this is happening right in front of me right now, live, and they're doing this, singing live. So I think it's very similar across the board. Whenever you watch any piece of theater, it comes across very well at any audiences from any, you know, cultures, different parts of the world. So yeah.
I think the great thing about a musical theater audience is they really want to, they want everything to succeed. They want to have a good time. They're not there, you know, to be like hypercritical. They're there to really enjoy themselves. So I think that makes it fun. But Erin, you teach theater in Jacksonville here, right?
Absolutely, yes. I teach theater at Stanton College Preparatory School.
And so do your students come see you in this show?
Last night, two of my graduated seniors actually came. Yeah, absolutely. It makes it that much more enjoyable just to know that they're out there watching and supporting, and I love them so much. It's a great job. I love it.
You're also a rock star in town, though. You perform with bands. You've done that
sometimes.
For years.
I have. And music and theater are definitely my life. So I'm very lucky to get to do what I do. I've performed with lots of different bands. Now I do mostly like wedding band gigs, which are fun and a little more cushy. And I get to get home before 2 o'clock in the morning, which is really nice.
And you're not reeking like cigarettes.
Oh,
maybe?
My gosh. Yeah. Gosh. It's so nice. I loved when they took smoking out of the restaurants and the bars. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Much to the dismay of others. But yeah, it's really nice. And I doing this show is totally different than that, but it's rewarding in such a different way.
Yeah,
like Marcus was saying, like the way that we're able to connect with the audience is very different than playing just regular band gigs.
Mm-hmm. And Marcus, you are in a role that has been played by some really big name heartthrobs of the 70s, which
Donnie.
I think is really funny. Donnie Osmond.
And he's coming here in July.
He is. And
here.
I want to write to him and be like, Donnie, come see our show. We'll sneak you in.
But Andy Gibb, David Cassidy, I mean, this really is kind of a landmark role for some of the major 70s heartthrobs. How does it feel to step into those shoes?
It's honestly, it's kind of an honor. I mean, it really is an honor because, I mean, I don't feel like a heartthrob. I'm certainly not, I don't think. So to be able to kind of follow that footsteps, it's amazing.
You can watch this on Facebook and YouTube if you want to check
this out. Facebook? No, yeah, you know, it's definitely an honor. And actually, I saw Donnie in Vegas in March,
I was
able to see him sing one of the shows from one of the songs from the show, so it was great. Yeah.
Well, the show runs through August 11th. Erin DeChico, Marcus Mann, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. And just as a reminder, we're going to have the presidential debate tonight live on WJCT News 89.9. That's starting at 9 o'clock. I'm Ann Schindler. You've been listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided in part by Baptist Health and North Florida TPO.